The government is hoping its newly announced inquiry into the banks will lay bare what is going on inside the banks when they determine interest rates paid by borrowers. The investigation by the ACCC follows years of campaigning by the Consumer Watchdog and the Labor Party, as well as a Royal Commission into Financial Services, which delivered damning findings into the banking sector. For more on this, I spoke a short time ago with the Shadow Assistant Treasurer Stephen Jones and Andrew Lamming from the Liberal National Party.
I think we talked about this very recently, Andrew, and here we go. Now we have another banking inquiry. In fact, I think the ACCC, Labor, they wanted all of this. Why did you hold off?
Well, you'd think the Labor Party would just welcome the inquiry. I mean, obviously using the ACCC, which has done exceptional work before to examine this record low interest rate environment and why these rates aren't being passed on, seems completely reasonable, eminently reasonable. You'd have to ask Stephen what the problem is.
It is reasonable. I asked you why the delay, given, I mean, it's not a new idea.
Well, there's been three cuts this year. Evidence is that only 57 basis points of the 75 passed on, hence the inquiry. That's completely logical, and you can't hold an inquiry during election period in May. So here we are 3 months later.
Okay. Stephen, have the banks put their profits ahead of the nation's broader economic good and, of course, their customers' economic good?
Well, look, clearly we are in uncharted territories. We're very close to unconventional monetary policy, negative interest rates. But I do want to say one thing. I'd be a lot more comfortable with the government's sudden announcement today if they hadn't sat on a report by the Productivity Commission published in June last year for over 12 months, which made a number of pointed recommendations to government about what it could do to enhance competition with the big banks and between the big banks and their competitors, particularly in the mortgage market, but not exclusively there. So they've been sitting on that for 12 months. They're not going to meet their own published timeline for implementing the Royal Commission's recommendation. So I've got to be a bit sceptical. Four inquiries in 4 years, another announcement today, what's going to change?
Okay, you say that, but what else could you do?
Well, there's a couple of things. Can I just go back to that Productivity Commission inquiry as an example? They made some recommendations about things the government can and should do around mortgage brokers implementing a best interest duty. That is to say, mortgage brokers should operate in the best interests of their client, a statutory duty. Why is that important? In an environment of constricted competition, 80% of the market governed or controlled by the four big banks, 66% of all new mortgages that are being written are coming through an insurance broker. So they're in an incredible powerful position to be able to direct customers towards alternatives other than the big banks or from one big bank to another on the basis of a better interest rate. They're not doing it, or it's not obvious that they're doing it, and we think a legislative requirement to have those brokers act in the best interests of their customers would be a big shift in that behaviour. I could also talk about the Productivity Commission's recommendation to publish transparent data as well. Again, not implemented. Two things they could have done already.
So, Andrew, should those things be implemented?
Well, I'm just remembering as recently as April this year, Patricia, we couldn't get the Labor Party to admit how important mortgage brokers were to the sector, blindly accepting all of the Royal Commission's recommendations before they'd even seen them, and then, you know, ultimately finding themselves in deep trouble with the entire mortgage broking sector. Took courage from Josh Frydenberg to find a way forward. So Labor's record isn't clean on this either, and we can keep going back into when Labor was in government for how little they'd done in some of these matters. We've been worried about banks not passing on interest rates well and truly in the 2007 to 2013 era as well, and Labor showed little interest then.
Let's change the topic and we'll talk about, okay, I heard that under your breath, let's change the topic to China and the discussion we're having on foreign affairs. Andrew, last week Peter Dutton accused the Chinese government of engineering a series of cyber attacks on Australian targets, stealing intellectual property and also essentially muzzling free speech. The embassy called it a malicious slur. What did you make of Peter Dutton's comments? Do you agree with him?
Look, we've got a really, really mature relationship with China. We have to work honestly and openly with them. At times, there'll be moments where we have to stand up to them. But in the main, it's a highly productive relationship. Observations about cyber attacks. I have to take the word of security agencies, and I suspect that everything the minister said there would have been well informed. But in reality, this question ultimately is one of mature balance. At times, we are going to have to say things that that might upset other powers. We have this very, very delicate strategic relationship with the major powers. I commend Peter Dutton for saying what he says, but it doesn't take away the nature of our China relationship.
Stephen Jones, isn't that what Peter Dutton was doing, just calling out facts? Is there anything inaccurate about what he said? What's the problem with it?
Look, the problem is this. So I agree with Andrew that we do have a mature relationship with China, but we've got incredibly immature outbursts like those of Peter Dutton. Frankly, if there are security concerns, you don't grab a you grab a telephone, not a loud hailer, and that's exactly what Peter Dutton did last week. And I think you had Penny Wong on earlier saying, making the very astute point that at a time when we need statesmen, we've got a salesman. The relationship with China is too important, too strategically important, too economically important for these off-script, immature, ill-thought-through contributions from senior ministers of the Crown.
Andrew, Gladys Liu has reviewed her associations with Chinese Communist Party-linked organisations and says she no longer has any inappropriate associations. Should her audit be made public?
Look, I've been incredibly sympathetic for any MP having to backtrack and review connections that they've had with community groups, of which I'm sure in Victoria there'd be dozens, if not hundreds. But I understand that Gladys has done that. It's really a matter for her and for the Prime Minister on the detail that's released. But you'd have to have some sympathy. I don't think community groups want to be dragged out into the public regarding this matter. It's up to every one of us as MPs to identify.
But they're not just
groups
community groups.
Prior to entering politics,
we're talking about.
They can be community groups. They
sure,
can be.
But we're talking about links with Communist Party association groups. That's what we're talking about here. This is not just the bridge club.
I understand, right? Patricia. And a lot of this is incredibly opaque. So, you know, when I go and meet a community group, it's very hard to know whether the chair of that group is the same as the one last year or the year before, and what the intention was of that group 2 years ago. So
it
is
made
opaque,
public,
and it's
which
complex.
Is kind of the question. That was my question.
Yeah, and I'd be looking at the overall benefit for this information being made public. Ultimately,
of course, it's
got
in
some
the national
concern,
interest, isn't it?
Then it has to be substantiated. So let someone come forward with a substantiated allegation. At the moment, we don't need to trawl out every community group and the nature of who runs them and what they've been up to. It's up to someone who has a concern about it to raise that concern. I think that's fair enough, because that standard applies already to every MP, and I don't see why standards should be different for Gladys.
I want to change the topic and stay with you, actually, to the Medivac legislation, because on that Medivac bill, peak medical authorities now have joined the Australian Medical Association in calling for the laws to stay. You are actually a doctor. Are you convinced by the arguments they're making, your own profession?
Look, not at all. You won't surprise you, Patricia. I find statements made by some of my medical colleagues completely out there. Typically, it's because those that choose to go into medical politics have a particular bent, while the rest of them are hard at work and don't have time necessarily to be part of these organisations. There's very, very great degree of heterogeneity in these groups. So, no, I don't accept just because they've made some statement regarding Medivac that it is an unassailable truth. It has to be tested. I think we had a perfectly working system that was bringing those that needed medical care to Australia and left it in the hands of the experts instead of, you know, doctors on the internet signing off people as having medical conditions potentially who hadn't even seen the patient. I mean, that's extraordinary, and I am surprised for any medical organisation that defends that.
Stephen Jones, of course, Jackie Lambie reserves her opinion until this report comes out on Friday. So it all seems to be going down to this report. How actively has Labor been actually lobbying Jackie Lambie? Because she's a key vote here.
Well, Jackie Lambie is a key vote, the cross senator is a key vote, and indeed the government is a key vote. And I've got to say, Patricia, if the system was working as Andrew described the way he thought it was working, this bill would never have come to Parliament. If people in Manus and elsewhere were able to receive the medical treatment that they needed in the way that it was needed to be delivered by their medical practitioners, and if a call by a medical practitioner that somebody needed to be treated back on the mainland wasn't contested by the minister, including in the courts, at every step of the way, this bill would never have seen the light of day. Unfortunately, that's not the way it worked. You had people waiting weeks and months to get the sorts of medical treatment their doctors said they needed. So you've got the entire medical profession on one hand and you've got Andrew Lemming on the other. I know which one I think is making the out there statements. It's not the medical profession. I'm down on the side of the AMA who say this bill is necessary to get the care that's needed.
Andrew Lemming, Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews says the federal government's draft religious freedoms bill or religious discrimination bill does the opposite of what it intends to do and that the bill threatens to undermine his election promise of banning gay conversion therapy. Is this something that should be looked at? Are you concerned that it could do that?
Look, I'd be confident that it would be looked at. It is an extremely complex piece of legislation itself, Patricia, and working out all of the exceptions and exemptions around religious freedoms is going to be just really complex. So I'm not going to be lampooning a genuine claim that there's a concern about legislation. I think those things have to be considered, and I think we'd be welcoming all stakeholders to be doing that. I mean, if this was easy, it would have been done years ago, but the reality is that religious protections don't exist equally in every state, and the federal government's made a commitment to address that. So let's just treat that as it may. If there is a concern about something like that being prevented by the bill, then let it be ventilated and looked at by those that are drafting the legislation.
Stephen, are you concerned by this element as well?
Yes, I am. And can I just say, look, the government's created a problem for itself. They promised all things to all people on religious freedom and anti-discrimination. Clearly, they can't even satisfy their own backbench, let alone the faith communities who have a deep interest in this, as does the rest of the community. I think it's time that the government either put a bill before the parliament and said, this is what we're going to do, or said that we've misled the Australian people, we can't deliver on what we were promising.
But they're consulting. Isn't that what all governments do? They put out a draft piece of legislation and then they consult.
They're consulting in a very, very limited way. As I've said to you on this program before, if this was simple and straightforward, I'm sure it would have been done in the past. I fall on the side of people who say, we actually don't think the problem is as big as many have said it is. I believe that we should have anti-discrimination provisions to ensure that people of faith aren't discriminated against. I made some statements on that, in particularly in relation to Israel Folau and others in the past. But I don't think that we have a huge problem in this country that needs to be fixed by a massive new piece of legislative reform, something that I'd hope Andrew would agree with me on, given his track record on these sorts of things. I think it's far more important that we have the existing laws adhered to and we have a cultural shift as opposed to a legislative shift in this area.
That was Labor's Stephen Jones and Andrew Lemming from the government side of the benches speaking to me on the ABC's News Channel a little earlier.